CBS, Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, Stanford University campus, to help me understand a clash between the parts of the Israeli government that are discernible in general terms. There is the legislative branch, the Knesset. There is the executive branch, that's the prime minister's office and his executives. And then there is the Supreme Court. Therein lies the similarity and important differences between the way the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. executive branch interact. Peter, a very good evening to you. Fundamental to this question of the clash in Israel between those who protest the intention of the Netanyahu government to make changes in certain policies. The clash turns on Israel lacks a constitution. What does that mean, Peter, practically speaking? Why is that part of the case now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Israel has been afflicted with controversy about the role of the Supreme Court now for about 30 years since a so-called constitutional revolution led by then Justice Aaron Barak. And it could be called a constitutional revolution because Barak found in 90s legislation grounds for striking down regular Knesset laws that were inconsistent with new basic laws, which were said to be part of a forming constitution. So Israel, you're quite right, does not have a written constitution. It has a constitution in coming into being. Separate laws have been acted now for about almost 70 years, which will eventually form a complete written constitution. Here's the problem for Israel, though. These laws that are forming the constitution are enacted on the basis of a simple majority vote. So it's on the one hand, quasi-constitutional status is ascribed to them, like the recent constitutional reform that the Netanyahu government passed. On the other hand, they only receive a majority vote, not a supermajority vote, so it becomes hard to see why the Supreme Court should not be able to review them. That's the quandary that Israel's facing right now, with some wanting the Supreme Court to review and strike down a recent change in a basic law, and the Netanyahu government insisting that nothing has changed. Like it or not, the Supreme Court does not have power to review an amendment to a basic law.
All right, two sides of the argument that explain the passionate protests in Israel these last months. One side, I'll take the Netanyahu government side. We command a majority in the Knesset. It took four or five elections, and we have one. Therefore, our policies, and this involves Judea, Samaria, the people who live there being incorporated into Israel, and it also involves the question of the ultra-Orthodox. These are policy questions. The Netanyahu government says, we have the majority, we're going to pass these laws. The opposing side says, the Supreme Court is capable of investigating these laws as to whether they're consistent with their understanding of what you said was the evolving or forming constitution.
Yes.
So those are the two sides. Now, the accusations, as I read them, this is a complete outsider. The Netanyahu side accuses the Supreme Court of being hyperactivist. The Supreme Court accuses the Netanyahu side of being, for want of a better term, a majoritarianism, and it barely won the election. Those are the two sides. Now, Peter, I'm going to say, if this was Solomon, I can't sort this out. You go ahead and sort it out for me.
Well, I'm not Solomon either, but I can tell you what you intuit. Actually, both sides are correct. The Israeli Supreme Court for the last 30 years has been hyperactivist. It has eliminated almost all bars to the kinds of cases it can hear and bars on who can bring a case. So the Netanyahu government's criticism of the Supreme Court has a solid basis. On the other hand, the critics of the Netanyahu government say if their particular reforms were enacted it would turn Israel into a country of simple, pure majoritarian rule. And the truth is, that's not how Israel was founded. Israel is, if you look at Israel's Declaration of Independence, you will find that the document makes clear that the state of Israel, the nation state of the Jewish people, will be a state in which protects rights of all citizens equally. In other words, Israel is a rights-protecting democracy. So it mustn't be that the cure to a real problem, a hyperactivist Supreme Court, is simple majoritarian rule, because that also would also betray the mix of founding principles that established the state of Israel. Israel needs to find a balance. The response to a pendulum swinging too far to one extreme is not to shove it to the other extreme.
And the accusation, allegation, suspicion that majoritarianism is genuinely the interest of the Netanyahu government, but when it's pointed out that the election turned on a very few number of votes, it is especially suggestive of turmoil in the population if you push through without a mandate. And I believe there was no speaking mandate of these policy changes. Was there during the four or five elections?
Well, that's exactly right. And we can even go back before them. Netanyahu served as prime minister quite successfully, I should say, from 2009 to 2019. He spoke nary a word in criticism of the court. And in fact, if anything, he defended the court. Five elections were held between 2019 and the one that Netanyahu's bloc won in November 2022. Prime Minister Netanyahu never made an issue of the courts. And that's connected to your first point about the narrowness of his majority. There is no doubt Benjamin Netanyahu's bloc won the election, but they won it with him by a margin of 30,000 votes. They didn't get a popular majority, but like in the United States, popular majority doesn't decide. But here's the point that gets lost. It does seem to me that in a democracy, a rights protecting democracy, it might be imprudent, but there's really no objection, no principled objection to ramming through policy changes on the basis of a narrow victory. But what the Netanyahu government is proposing is substantial changes in the nature of the regime, a transformation in the separation of power system in Israel. And that, it seems to me, in a healthy democracy, ought to be done on the basis of consensus or fairly wide agreement if you're fundamentally altering the regime. And we see that in the American system. If Congress, if one party has narrow margins in the House and the Senate, they may be unwise, but go ahead, pass a law. But to change the Constitution, well, that's prescribed in Article 5. You need two-thirds of both houses to propose amendment or conventions in two-thirds of the states, and then you need three-quarters of the states to ratify the amendment. Substantial change in the governing structure requires a supermajority, and from a distance, although I wrote the article in Israel, now I'm sitting in Washington, D.C., from a distance as a visitor to the state, seems to me political cohesion and stability, wide agreement is necessary for substantial change to the separation of power system in Israel.
Now for the culture. Your colleague, Gadi Taub, has written,
yes,
Israel's elites revolt against democracy. And if I understand this article correctly, we're not looking at policy disputes over Judea and Samaria or the ultra-Orthodox. What we're looking at is the frustration of the elite, that would be the technocratic elite that live in Tel Aviv and travel the world, failure to overcome Netanyahu's Likud party for several elections leads to a surrogate overturning of Netanyahu's government in the form of this dispute over the court. I think that that's a suspicion. Is there grounds for that suspicion?
The answer is yes, there are grounds for that suspicion. And Gadi Taub is a friend and a very acute observer of the Israeli scene and a staunch supporter of the Netanyahu government. But once again, that is a partial truth. The partial truth being that a significant portion of the progressive elites in Tel Aviv really do want to oust Netanyahu, and they see the demonstrations and the controversy over judicial reform as an opportunity to do just that. But that doesn't capture the entirety of the situation, not by a long shot. For one thing, a big part of the demonstration includes Israel's high-tech sector, and it includes, to great controversy, significant parts of the army, pilots and pilots and elite pilots and leaders of intelligence units. Now, this is a tremendously delicate subject in Israel because members of the governing coalition say that those who are protesting are willing to, as they say, burn down the house, that is, destroy the economy and render Israel less capable of defending itself. The reply is this, that many of these people have taken a strong and principled stand. They believe that the government is undermining the social contract with the people, is causing tremendous instability. So investors are taking their money out, and pilots who have served courageously for two decades now saying that they're not prepared to serve a government that's no longer has mechanisms for protecting individual rights, which includes minority rights. And you know, it's a lesson as old as Aristotle, but it's also familiar to us from the Federalist Papers that once again, pure democracies are inherently unstable. We always want some sorts of mixed regimes. Our version of the mixed regime in the United States is a regime that also protects individual rights, which puts limitations on what the majorities can do. But there are also various economic interests, security interests that have to be, it seems to me, have to be taken into account. And Israel can't maintain itself without a thriving high-tech sector, and it can't defend itself without without the best pilots in the Middle East, which are its pilots. So I would like to see both sides working assiduously to recognize the wounds and grievances on the other side and find a way to compromise. Because, John, as we go through it in each case, I'm forced to say that there's justice in each side's criticism of the other, but each side also tends not to see the justice in each side's criticism of it.
I'm speaking with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing at Real Clear Politics about the controversy clash in the state of Israel that is said to be resolved or on a way to resolution or maybe not in these next days. So when we come back, more questions about the difference, my understanding of the difference between the way the U.S. Constitution is supposed to work and the way the Israeli forming Constitution works, especially with regard that magic piece of the original Constitutional Convention, minority rights. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashan.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.